Oh, hey gang, how we doing?
Good man, how you going? How you doing, Brianne?
I'm just dandy. Just, Cal seems upset.
Just dandy.
What's Cal- wrong in life today, Cal?
Let me get my itemized
Something
list.
Got me thinking about the last Star Wars movie, and now I'm just in a bad mood.
Whatever could have made you think
Hang
of
on.
The last Star Wars
Is that a
movie?
Man behind that curtain?
It's okay, I can make him hate me more than he hates you right now by mentioning a TV show that shouldn't exist anymore in anyone's minds.
What TV show is that?
Exactly. What,
Doctor Who?
No. One that finished last year.
Don't.
Doctor Who?
No, it's worse than Doctor Who. Imagine a TV show worse than Doctor Who, everybody. It exists.
I can't imagine it.
Imagine, right? Imagine 8 seasons... 6 of which were filled with awesome character and development, and then 2 of which, 2 of which sucked.
Steven Universe didn't have 8 seasons.
Take that, Steven Universe.
Oh, I'm so sad about Steven Universe future. But anyway...
Can I just point out, Brianne, who always is at me about us going off topic, opens the episode by bringing up Game of Thrones.
No, I was trying... No. Don't put this on me. Cal started this by going, I'm upset about Star Wars. And I went, I can fix it. I'll make you upset about something else instead. but on to happier things. Spooky monsters...
But before Spooky Spooky
Boo.
Monsters, we've
Boo.
Got...
We've got tweets about
spooky
monsters.
Spooky tweets.
Oh, yay.
We've got...
Wonderful.
Some mid-episode tweets from @RileyIsGood. First one says, mid-ep tweets. I still haven't checked out the Evil Dead TV show, but keep meaning to. And apparently there's another movie in the works. You really ought to check out the reboot if you haven't already. I do want to, so we will, but I just don't know when.
Add it to the list.
Let's just keep Spooky Ween going until
until the end of the year.
Until January.
Spooktober's
like nothing happens in November.
Thanksgiving movies, thank you very much.
Yeah, there's like the Peanuts Charlie Brown episode, and that's it. Yeah, that's not something we can relate to. I'm sorry to say.
How dare
but
you?
I think Spooktober should continue till through November, and then we've got the Christmassy season, and then we've got Brianuary, and then next year.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the bridge will be Nightmare Before Christmas, because we apparently can't agree on when that movie's a movie.
Nightmare Before Christmas, is it a Christmas movie, or is it a Halloween movie?
It's a musical.
It's a Halloween movie.
It's a Christmas movie. Tweet us at Video Shop Pod and fix, you know, solve this domestic dispute Brianne and I are having.
It's not a domestic dispute.
If Die Hard is a Christmas movie, then I guess Nightmare Before Christmas is.
No, it's a Halloween movie.
If the only like criteria is takes place at Christmas, then I guess it's a Christmas movie. But aesthetically, it's Tim Burton, so it's like edgy fake Halloween.
It is Halloween appropriating Christmas.
Anyway, we've got another tweet from @RileyIsGood, who says, yep. Scream 4 isn't on the same level as 1 or 2 for me, but I still do really like it. More than anything, I'm impressed it's good at all. Late sequels like that often end up sucking. Neither of you have seen
it. The bar
is
pretty low.
You're right, RileyIsGood. Scream 3 is so bad. It's so balls. Scream 4, though, has the common sense to just kind of satirize itself. It makes fun of Scream, which I think
is the last thing
you can do.
No, Sam. You can't say that something that, like, that one movie that takes the piss out of Scream is a parody of a parody and therefore is bad, and another movie that takes the piss out of Scream is a parody of a parody and therefore it's good.
I can, Cal. I've
never... Scary movie.
Never claimed to be a consistent person and never will. Hypocrites united.
Ha!
@RileyIsGood's next tweet says, I really should have watched Candyman before suggesting you cover it. Maybe I'll watch it today. Maybe I'll watch it today after having it spoiled for me. Shrugging emoji.
Riley, you are abuse that power. You you had no idea what sort of bombs you were just throwing around willy-nilly.
Callously.
We bent to your whim. The least you can do is think about it. God damn.
What a movie, too. Candyman was something else.
Candyman was so weird. And I feel like we didn't say enough about it, I feel like. I remember that episode being just a bit... Like, we were left speechless because there's... Yeah.
What were your thoughts on Candyman, Brienne?
I will remind you of how many times you've just said the word, Samuel.
I see. So, we're cutting it off? There's a mirror behind us?
Yep, we're done talking about it. Moving on.
At Riley is Good's next tweet is, I quite dislike Star Trek Discovery, in brackets, for reasons that apply to pretty much all of the post-reboot Star Trek. But diversity is something I think it handled pretty well, maybe the best out of all the new Trek stuff. So, I understand the, I understand why people don't like New Trek. As far as, like, it's aesthetically very different in the timeline, it's also much darker. Season 2 of Discovery and the first season of Picard have the exact same plot. One thing I think Discovery gets really well, and I think Lower Decks does really well in as well, though, is characterization, especially after the second season. The characters are really strong and you're really invested in them. So even though the story isn't amazing, you're invested in seeing the characters do well, at least for me. So yeah. But I understand a lot of people are put off by the stories because they aren't always as Star Trek-y as they should be.
I like it, and that is all I have to say on that.
I also like it. Cal, what do you think of Star Trek?
I have no interest in it. Like, not even a little bit.
What about old school Star Trek, Cal?
It's pretty, Cal.
Interested in watching old Star Trek. Everything I've heard about Star Trek Discovery just makes me think there's just no point.
Why? I actually really like it, and it's pretty, and it's made well.
It does look amazing. It is one of the most expensive-looking shows I've ever seen.
The only piece of it that's really not worth anything is the actual pilot, because episode 3 should have been the pilot.
Yeah, that's the Star Trek Discovery's pilot, which we did cover on the podcast, Cal, was...
I was going to say, if that's the one I watched...
Yeah.
Yeah, it gave me absolutely no...
What that should have been is the show should have started with episode 3, and that two-part pilot should have been like a special TV movie prequel thing
that they released later
for people who are super nerds, not the actual pilot, because they tell you everything else throughout the rest of the season, and there's far more mystery and interest in what's happening with these characters when you don't that happen.
If you skip, and I'm going to say that if you're thinking about watching Star Trek Discovery, anyone who's listening, skip the pilot two-parter and just start from episode 3, because episode 3 actually introduces all the characters you're going to spend time with, actually sets up an interesting mystery, because it opens with your main character in a prison transport that gets abducted by the Discovery. Essentially, it's a really intriguing, interesting opening to the show, which the context for which completely ruins any stake you have in the
story.
It's
far more interesting to discover it rather than to just know it.
Yeah, so by time you get to, and that's why the show doesn't pick up, I think, for a lot of people by the mid-season point, and then the especially the second season, which again has some great characters.
It feels a little bit like watching a prequel before you watch the movie that came out first.
Yeah, it's like watching The Phantom Menace before you've seen the original Star Wars. Another thing you care a lot about, Cal?
Okay. I've so little to add to this. Like, that's fine. Continue. Just wake me up when you're done.
The next tweet we have is also from @RileyIsGood, which says, update, did watch Candyman, it was good. And if you did want to cover the Invisible Man, I'd be keen. Thank you for your permission, Riley is Good. I did a marathon of all 9 Invisible Man movies and it was real fun. Oh boy.
There's God 9 damn. Of these movies?
Apparently. I know that
he was part of the Universal Monster Movie universe, so he's appeared in a bunch of movies.
So are there like 8 of them where like women just scream hysterically and like flail their bodies around?
and cops just sort of go, whoa, yeah, uh-huh, yep, righto, and then get walloped with a table.
That's what I have to say to that.
This is all post-music discussion. That's all our tweets, so I think we can crack on now.
All right, play the music. Welcome to the Video Shop Podcast, about what you're watching, maybe. I'm your host, Cal.
I'm your other host, Sam, and today we're joined by Brianne to discuss The Invisible Man from 1933 and The Invisible Man from 2020.
One of three movies that came out this year.
one of the three movies that actually came out this year that we're going to talk about.
I'd say it's won all the muffins already.
It hasn't got a lot of competition, let's be honest.
It's that Sonic so or a Birds of Prey.
We usually start talking about
old movie, right?
Well, I was going to say, we usually about whether we do start with the old movie and then remember that we do start with the old movie.
Well, so you've got the umming and ahhing down, so let's just go.
Cool. What did you guys think?
It's old, right?
It's very old, isn't it? Boy, it sure is an old movie.
I feel we got that taken care of.
I feel like that's obvious, but it is very old. But also in saying that...
How many times are you going to say
it? It was an old movie. That's all I'm saying. Some of the effects were surprisingly good, though.
Very good.
And then some of them were surprisingly bad.
Well, yeah, because there are a few times when they were using, I assume, a green screen, but I'm not completely up on how that works in black and white.
It's not green screen.
It's multi-plane camera work. So essentially what they do is they film it onto a translucent cell, put it in front of the next plane of cells, and then a bunch of this happens in a vertical plane.
But usually what they have to do that is they have to film it in two exposures on a black screen.
Yeah.
And then...
Although some of this stuff looked like it could have been
drawn. The point is, when you can't see the inside of his collar...
Yeah.
it's like, it breaks it a little bit. But some of the wire work in particular looked... really good.
Well, the problem I had with the wire work is I'm like, this looks like it's floating, not like it's being carried. You know, that's not how something moves when someone's... When I pick up my bottle, it doesn't, like, wobble.
Well, the better example that I pointed out was, like, when he pulls the chair forward, is that there should be that little bit of an indent where the hand grabs it, but instead it just slides across the floor. And it doesn't really wobble as you, like, adjust your weight in the chair. It was a little bit of a rocking chair.
But in saying that, that was 33. We were trying to figure out how they did the footprints at the end in the snow.
I assume stop motion.
No, because you see them press in.
I mean, although it could have been stop motion, like, they could have, like, just gone in, frames. Like, multiple frames and taken a bit of the snow out. Like, in a really small scale, obviously, but...
Someone just sat there with a shoe and went, duh, photo, duh, photo, duh.
Yeah,
photo,
maybe.
Duh, photo. Okay, next footprint. Oh, God.
Yeah, that sounds horrible, doesn't it?
I mean, they could have. It's really hard to say, especially since they're working with snow, to where it's not like they could have gone in, made a thing, and walked away because they've got to keep the rest of it fine.
Yeah.
Maybe someone's got, like, a shoe on a stick that they just kind of, like... cast out like a fishing wire.
That doesn't... You still wouldn't see the indent then, though.
Well, no, like a hard stick. It's like on a thing, so you like reach it out there and then press it in.
But you got to press it in a little bit at
sort
a time.
Like,
yeah. Frame.
Like a boom mic stick that they just sort of hang over the... Yeah.
Tweet us at Video Shop Pod. How do you think they did the effect? But no Googling it like we could have done right now.
And maybe by
that's
next
such
week,
great
we'll
radio
have
hearing
dancing.
Us read a Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Well, I've got a Wikipedia page ready to go for later. Don't you worry your little head, Cal.
Well, and so with these special effects, like it's interesting that they're sort of having the same problems in the 1930s as we're sort of having now. Like at the risk of skipping ahead too much to the 2021, anytime that there's a gun floating and it's like clear that the gun's not even really in the room, it's a CGI gun.
Yeah.
Like, we've just seen a whole bunch of people holding guns the way humans would hold a gun, and now we've seen a computer pretend there's a gun in someone's hand, and it's really jarring to see that thing. And it's like, if they had have just done it with a real gun on a wire, it probably would have looked pretty similar.
Yeah, it might have. I mean, maybe. I remember not being quite... I remember being quite surprised at how good the effects in the new Invisible Man were. Mostly
the
because
effects are good.
Mostly
general.
Because I didn't notice them. I didn't like see the effects, you know?
Well, and Elizabeth Moss is far more convincing at throwing her body around a room than any of the people
in the 30s. I was going to say that guy who just threw himself, like, did a barrel roll over a chair.
Oh, no, I'm going to hold my own neck, as if someone is choking me.
Oh, no, I'm being choked out.
I'm not really even holding my own neck that hard, but I am dying. I guess I will lay down for a nap now.
Acting really wasn't a refined art form in the 1930s.
Well,
was it
saying to Sam earlier that, like, the only way women acted in the 30s is either they were like the desperate widow who was in love with the big doe eyes,
and
or
screams.
The crazy freaking like hag who had the
who
fuzzy hair
screams.
Bun who just like turned into, you know, that like Kermit meme where he just like shakes back and forth. That's what they do.
And then all the men, though, what? They're all like emotionless scientists, every one of them.
Or talk
or,
like
or, a... I was gonna say or hysterical policemen.
Yeah, talk
well,
like they're
like,
sports
so...
reporters from the '50s.
Because like the characters, I think the actors that did a good job, I think, were like, unfortunately, yes, she does descend into Kermit the Frog territory. But at the beginning, the innkeeper and the innkeeper's wife were relatively convincing actors compared to everybody else.
Well, that's true, and they felt like people rather than story bit. Like even though
everybody
she
else
screamed
is...
hysterically at because. He slammed the door in her face. I was like, well, fair enough. That character would do that.
I was going to say, we were talking about kind of like moving more towards plot with it. We were talking, this is all instigated by the fact he pushes someone down the stairs in his disguise.
Yeah, yeah. We're like, what's the point of being invisible if you're just going to beat a guy up with your bandages on anyway?
Yeah, like, I was half expecting it to go full horror and for him to kill everybody in the bar while invisible.
Even though this movie's pre-code,
like, oh.
It's still not quite that pre-code.
Well, this is the thing, is it's even though it's pre-code, which is interesting in itself, but, like, did he kill someone before that? Or was that the first instance of hurting someone?
The first time he hurt someone, but the first person he killed was not even, was the police
after that.
Chief.
Yeah.
He didn't even kill the Bobby with the mustache.
No one would have had any concern for him if he had not done this thing.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with being invisible. It all of the invisible stuff kind of fell out from him pushing this man down the stairs. And he basically went, oh,
like,
well, it doesn't matter that I push someone down the stairs, because you'll never catch me.
Well, and, like, some of the more interesting parts of this movie were trying to solve the problem of how do you catch an invisible person?
Yeah.
And by the end, the last, like, the... Because I assume they just kept going up the sort of chain of command within the police force. And so the last guy who's sort of like, here's our plan, here's how we catch him, like, was giving me proper, like, L from Death Note sort of vibes.
Yeah.
Of like, no, that plan won't work, that plan won't work, but this will. We're going to do that.
And then
of movie with a proper, like, genius detective tracking him down could be super interesting.
Well, I think my ultimate problem with that is that I had seen the 2021 first, where all of that is handled far better with, like, the severity of what can actually, like, be the gaslighting that is an actual invisible man. Everyone just kind of jumps on board this idea of an invisible man, even though no one in the town has seen him this entire movie.
No one can see an invisible man.
I made the joke. Well, but they do in the 2020 that's version true. Because of the way it's dealt with as tech instead of chemicals.
It's true.
Anyway, I was saying to Sam at some point in the movie, I'm like, this is basically like the myth of the Florida man. Like, you could easily set this up far more to be, does the town doubting, does this guy actually exist? Or is this just a hysterical conspiracy theory that everyone thinks is hilarious of like, oh, well, he's in my barn. He actually was in the barn, but still.
Well, that's what they do initially. But then... that police chief is like, it's a conspiracy. I don't believe it. And then, like, immediately gets murdered. And I'm like, well, all right, blow your cover. Like, the thing you had is no one believed it. That was your greatest weapon.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, it did seem like the whole he's going mad thing was just an excuse to end the movie quicker.
Well, yeah,
because like, as far as so, like the book version of this started off as, what are they called? Like newspaper, like mini stories.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those and old sci-fi stories were.
A lot of H.G. Wells stuff definitely was, and then so when it was put into a novella, it was still just a series of short stories, and then it just happens to end with, yeah, basically the same way. The town just sort of comes together and kicks him to death.
Fabulous.
It's about, like, how horrible it is to basically be in exile from society, like, trapped with no way to interact with anybody else.
A little more contemplative than this one.
Yeah, a bit more about the inner struggle of someone who's isolated, and less about this, like, old, man shouldn't have toiled with God's creation bullshit.
Yeah.
It sends you mad. But it's interesting that, like, the power corrupting a person and that sort of stuff, but all of that is sort of brushed away with the whole... it's a drug that's turning him mad from India.
Yeah, that's a little bit old. Like, that's very much old, like, Universal monster movie things. It's all a drug or a thing that someone brought back from India that does a thing. Speaking of monsters, though, from the Universal monster movie catalog, these old school one, does the Invisible Man have the highest body count?
Surely Dracula would have the highest body count.
But in the movie, how many people does Dracula actually kill? I haven't seen it, but I bet it's less than a whole train worth of people.
It's probably true.
Yeah, fair enough. And there's a sort of... I know, because they say how many people from the search party died. Like, where he's just like, as soon as anybody looks over the cliff, he just pushes them off.
Stop going to the... Anyway, yep.
Yeah. Like, it's...
All I'm saying is I wouldn't be killed by the Invisible Man because I wouldn't go near the cliff. Because I'm spooked by heights. But that's the thing,
like... it's interesting that we sort of bring up that, like, the townsfolk, like, believed it immediately, but in the modern take, they don't. Like, how people's understanding of science and their, like, confidence in the security of the world around them, you know, has increased so much over time that, yeah, it's... It'd be interesting to do a period piece where it wouldn't be that ridiculous if there's witches that we're burning. Of course there can be an invisible man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
we're not that far in the past, are we? We're not at, like, witch burning territory.
This is set in the 30s.
Yeah, it's still the 30s, which...
Post-World War I.
Well,
but it's also, you have to remember, and putting it in context of today and the history we know of the 1920s, we had just had a massive pandemic then that no one believed in. So you're going to tell me that 10 years later we believed in an invisible man from chemical experiments?
No, fair enough. So yeah, you do an Invisible Man story, but even further back in time than that. Could be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, you could do, like, setting things in times where people believed in witches and things like that in a far more kind of malicious way would be, I think, a more interesting way to approach it.
And then you're going to the Frankenstein kind of era, right? The mid to late 18th century.
Well, you're going into alchemy rather than chemistry, I think.
Or, yeah, 18th
century. You need to go into a time of alchemy rather than chemistry, which is why I think kind of jumping back and forth between the new one again, is the new one works far more better in, like, the proposition of what science is capable of. You're never going to have the chemical that just magically does the thing. It's very fantastical, and, you know, it's almost the same origin story as Rapunzel's hair in Tangled, where it's like, oh, well, the magical juice of the flower did the magical thing.
That's true. It's literally a flower in this, too.
So the idea of something more modern where it's technologically based and based off of mirrors and cameras and what we know about light refraction is far more believable and what makes it a little bit more scary.
It's a modern movie, you know. It's one of those differences you just have to, and it's why I think some of the monster movie reboots of late haven't worked. What's interesting about what you're saying about both of you are saying about taking something in the past is the Mummy movie set in the past works and the Mummy movie set in the present doesn't.
I mean, because I don't think the Tom Cruise Mummy movie suffers from that problem. I think it suffers from a litany of other problems.
I don't know what you're talking about. I think it's just that it's set in the present, Cal. I think that's the one contributing factor. Because
the whole time I'm just like, use your mobile phone, Tom Cruise. If you just did that, everything would be fine.
Yeah, so when are we going to get the Tom Cruise and Elizabeth Moss team-up movie?
I mean, because it was originally supposed to be Johnny Depp in this role, yeah?
There's the Invisible Man, yeah.
Like, there's really no reason why it couldn't have been Johnny Depp in this.
I'm glad it wasn't, though.
I don't know I don't remember the timeline of, like, how much time, like, whether this movie was delayed after the travesty that was the Tom Cruise Mummy movie.
Yeah.
Before we
skip on to the next one, which we should do in a minute, I just wanted to address the one thing with the chemical invisibility thing I found is he's like, I have to wait for an hour after I eat because you can see my food inside me. And I'm like, all right, well, I mean, I guess that makes sense because every cell of him's invisible, right? But that means as soon as he's digested his food, all his poop's invisible too.
Yeah,
so he can poop anywhere.
Well, it just, none of it really, like, the science of it, and I know it's a movie from the 30s, but the science of it makes zero sense.
No sense.
And, like, you know, I get into the nitty-gritty of the science-y things, and I'm like, okay, well, how does light refract? Does he have a shadow? Is it bouncing around him? Or is it fine? If you can see food in him, should light be interacting with this thing? Why is the chemical process of digesting food changing it to be part of his chemical makeup?
Well, that's the thing. It's implying that your digestive system and everything in it is part of your chemical makeup, which just isn't true.
The light refraction is the bigger thing for me.
Are humans even one thing, or are they a cluster of many things?
My teeth and my bones are, like,
those are part of you.
I know they are.
Just as affected as my skin.
But like, you inject it under your skin, and it gets into my bones and makes my bones invisible too.
Well, yeah. Your blood does, like, interact with your bone system.
I know it does. But
bone marrow
but
and all
not
that.
Not your fingernails or your hair.
That's true.
No, you're right. Hair, you could probably make an argument for how it affects the follicles. But again, like, your body absorbing nutrients, sure, that would disappear. But the waste and the way that is created into, like, poop and pee would still be byproducts as if food in your stomach.
I can solve the hair problem. And what should have happened when he died at the very end and became visible is he should have had complete alopecia, not a single hair on his body.
Yeah, if it was like chemo and just like wiped him.
Yeah, shaved.
In the book, he's an albino.
Really?
And
interesting.
Yeah, and the chemical only works on things that are already really pale, things that are reflecting a lot of light already.
That doesn't make any sense.
Not at all. but so I think the book would sort of satisfy a few of those problems. It's still a very old, like, 1800s interpretation of, like, how would this work? What are the nitty-gritty of
it? It's one of those problems, though, when if you try to answer the question, you better have your answers sorted because I would have not even thought about it if you'd left it at that.
Well, and yeah, because like with the more modern take, how do the soles of his feet work?
Yeah,
like do they the have answer is cameras? It's actually impossible as, with our current technology. So if we could answer any of these questions.
But at no point in the new movie do they go does he go, I need to wait an hour when I put my suit on for the feet to calibrate the top of my head light reflection properly. Like, you know.
Well, yeah.
Which is why I didn't even think about that. Shall we move on to the new one?
Yes.
Yes, we shall.
It is an excellent... what did we all think of the old one, just real quick?
It's fine. I mean, it's a Universal Monsters movie. Probably not the top of my Universal Monsters movie list, but not the bottom.
This being my first Universal Monster movie...
this is your first Universal Monster movie?
It's also my first.
I mean, technically the Tom Cruise the old mummy movie.
That doesn't count.
The Tom Cruise mummy movie. But
technically that counts.
Of the original run, of the original ones, this is my first.
You guys have never seen Frankenstein?
No.
Wow.
I might have seen like Abbott and Costello versus like the Wolfman or something at some point.
I'd barely count that.
Yeah.
But you've never seen Frankenstein. You've never seen the original Frankenstein.
No.
Wow.
No. I've seen clips. There's a clip of it in the Doctor Who TV movie.
Of course there is.
Yeah, well,
and
I've
that would be
that.
The only way you've seen it. Okay, well, I know what's going on your list for next year.
Brianuary.
Sure. No, 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 no.
How about we wait until Universal brings out their new Frankenstein movie?
Well, this is actually an interesting idea to talk about, looking at the current... this is an interesting idea, looking at the new Invisible Man movie, of updating these kind of monsters to be modern-day monsters, and not necessarily... updating them to not necessarily just be spooks and haunts of dreams and kind of mythos into actual things of domestic... terror, domestic violence, the lies and misinformation that they could be of modern issues. How would you take the story of Frankenstein and do something similar with it? How would you do that with each of these monsters as they have with the Invisible Man? It's an interesting concept that I think we talked about quite a bit when we saw the new one.
Yeah, yeah. Just before we move completely onto the new one, I quickly wanted to run through those other Invisible Man movies that Riley mentioned.
Oh, the ones that none of us have seen?
Yeah. Cool. Because the second one is The Invisible Man Returns.
Hell.
I think...
someone finds his chemicals, drinks it, and we have the same thing again.
You're probably right. The film is about... Sir Geoffrey Radcliffe, who is condemned for a murder he did not commit, which leads to him to beg Dr. Frank Griffin to inject him with the invisibility serum, despite Griffin's warning that the serum will drive him mad. Okay. Terrible plan. So it's not the same character, it's a different character. Then there's a third one called The Invisible Woman.
Oh, yes, because it's the 40s, and we now have to, like, do the exact same thing with a lady... But not in the same way.
I was going
to
say, but this one.
Hang on. Are you saying that came out in 2020? Yeah, that's
no.
Or wait, 2016.
This one came out in 1940, and it's a comedy now. It's not. It's a screwball comedy instead of a horror. Right. So that's great.
Look at that disgusting poster.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. You can all go look it up, everyone. Anyway, then there's Invisible Agent, The Invisible Man's Return... The Invisible Man's Revenge. Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. Apparently he's in that. And then Abbott and Costello meet The Invisible Man. Then there's also The Invisible Man 2020, which is what we're going to talk about now. Finally.
Wonderful.
There's going to be another one?
Yes, but this one... The Invisible Woman... is
and it's directed by Elizabeth Banks.
I don't know if this movie's still happening because it's not connected to the Invisible Man though.
I don't really care.
So it's not Elizabeth Moss.
But I like Elizabeth Banks too.
It's fair.
I trust her to do that.
Elizabeth Banks gets thrown around by an invisible man. Spoilers.
Elizabeth Moss gets thrown away.
Elizabeth Moss. This is directed by Lee Whannell. Lee Whannell, an Australian director who made Upgrade.
Yes. Who seems like a really chill dude in some of the interviews that I've seen.
Yeah.
One in particular, he was talking about, his philosophy of leaving it up to the audience to determine, like, what the movie's about. He just makes the movie. Like, he's the least qualified person to tell you
what the
movie's
about. He doesn't
care
what the philosophy behind it is. It's fair.
Well, which is interesting for a,
not many creatives are like that.
Well, it sounds like a really dumb idea. Because, like, the clear themes here of domestic abuse, like, surely that was conscious.
Here's the thing. I think it's probably a bit of lip service. I think he's probably, like, he knows exactly what the movie is actually about through his interpretation, but he's not going to tell any audience what the movie is about.
What they should think it's about. Yeah, fair enough.
And then you've got Elizabeth Moss, who's the producer on it, right? She produced it?
I think she's one of the producers. I'd have to double check.
Of The Handmaid's Tale fame. Maybe she's not a producer on this
she's
one.
She's of lots of things fame.
Well, she's probably most well known at the moment for Handmaid's Tale.
No, she's most well known for Mad Men. Handmaid's Tale's her most recent thing.
I haven't seen Mad Men. Cal's wandered off.
Therefore, it doesn't count.
Exactly.
No, Mad Men is like the first thing that she really like had a big name for, I believe. Handmaid's Tale has really taken off. She's now not only the lead of Handmaid's Tale, but producing and started directing an episode right when everything started. So she'll be directing a few episodes in the next season.
Nice.
Whenever we get that.
Nice. So she's the main character in this one. Framing this from a different perspective than The Invisible Man was a very smart choice. Because then you can actually play on the horror of stalked by someone
you
can't see.
Yeah. Well, and it makes more sense that he's the monster. So why would we see it from the monster's point of view?
Yeah.
He's the victim in the 30s one.
Well, he's a victim of his own hubris or whatever, the OG one. This guy's just literally a monster.
Yeah.
His brother's not too crash hot either.
Well, the relationships in this film, in the new one, are what makes it interesting. There's a lot more character development than anything that happens in the 30s one. You spend so much time wondering and kind of almost being asked to pick a side in this domestic dispute, even though it should be quite obvious what side to fall on.
Yeah, the one that doesn't have the crazy invisible guy on it.
I mean, but what's interesting about this film, though, is we are in the perspective of Elizabeth Moss, to where we do truly see and believe these things are happening. But can you truly blame the people that are around who aren't seeing these things happening, thinking that she has some severe level of PTSD that's caused some other mental things? It's also commentary on the state of mental health at the moment.
Yeah,
and
that's
the ability
true.
To diagnose and help people properly.
Watching the movie, it's so harrowing watching, like, the daughter of her friend get punched in the head and then she gets blamed for it. Like, that moment is so fucked, and I struggle to watch. Like, spoilers for this movie. If you haven't seen it, go watch it, like, right now.
Everyone should watch this movie. It's
If you're in the US, it's on HBO Max, if you have it. Anywhere else, go down to your local pier.
That's what I did, so I can't recommend anything in particular. I'm sure if you have a VPN, you'll be able to find it somewhere.
Yeah, not real. It's a little bit too new still, but it's all on demand. So if you've got one of those services,
it is worth paying for this movie.
I would buy this. I'd
You'd
own this on
Blu-ray.
You'd
be able to rent it for like $5.
Yeah, rent it on Apple. Like,
and it is worth it. No, it's just it's so heartbreaking to be in her perspective, but you can also feel the idea of people trying to understand this and having no concept of it. It's like you've been pushed into this headspace of a small child that thinks ghosts exist is almost the mentality around her. So there's so much happening, but the more another interesting aspect of the believability and the picking of sides is this relationship between the two brothers. Is Brother Bob being just as manipulated as Elizabeth Moss, or was he always in on it? Was his story at the end fabricated, or was he actually a victim to the brother? It's all of those relationships and questions of what you see and what you don't see are what make this movie a little bit scarier, in that, again, kind of into the reality of 2020, what do you believe and what don't you believe?
Yeah, well, the context that we now have, you know, 6 months after this movie came out is quite... Well, true, but yeah, true. But, like, it's just... Yeah.
Well, because, like, we never actually see Adrian do anything.
No, we only ever see the brother do it. So that's what one of the very interesting things for me.
Except at the start... We don't see his face, but we have to assume he's the one that smashes the window of a car in.
Oh, yeah, but punching a window
that's the domestic of a car isn't... abuse, not necessarily the Invisible Man abuse.
Yeah, that's true.
I think there is that whole fabricated, well, I believe it to be a fabricated story at the end of he's been trapped, Adrian's been trapped in this, like, prison cell while his brother's been masquerading off, abusing his wife as some kind of torture revenge thing to set Adrian up, which is why I believe it to be fabricated and that they were colluding in some way, shape, or form, whether or not the brother was... Exactly. So, which is why I think it's fabricated, but there is an argument to, we won't really know.
Yeah, you can't really know, because it's just who says what.
It's the truth you choose
to
believe.
And if your brother's got the invisibility suit, like, how can you... Like, at any point, he could just turn up in your room and strangle you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The whole, like, manipulative brother angle, like, takes a whole new ballgame once he's got actual superpowers.
Yeah. It's just such an intense movie to watch. Like, even that opening scene of her, like, escaping the house.
Yeah.
It
starts you off immediately in this place of fear and... not really, you know, you don't see the devil you're fighting.
And you don't have the context yet, which makes it unnerving in of itself. Sometimes not knowing exactly what's happening.
What you're running from,
Is just as, just as bad as anything else. This movie is a reboot of the rebooted Universal Monster franchise. Because The Mummy was meant to be this new big shared universe again, but they were like, well, that was bad and everyone hated that, so what we're going to do is focus on storytelling, low-budget individual projects. And I'm like, that is smart, and this is a really good starting point.
Well, and again, this grounds it in some level of reality, whereas The Mummy was still very much...
So fantastical.
Yeah, mythic and extraordinary.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing, like, the mythic and extraordinary stuff, but you just have to ground it in a reality still.
Yeah.
Or make the rules consistent. That was the problem with the new Mummy movie.
Well, the problem with movies like that is, like, it's supposedly grounded in reality, and then someone just, like, unleashes Pandora's box of magic onto the world. But the whole world doesn't change with the magic, just this one aspect of it.
Yeah.
And it feels like someone's trying to shove a square into a circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... I don't know. All I remember of the Tom Cruise Mummy movie is that it was just a straight-up hot mess.
Yeah.
Like, I think it wasn't any one thing. It was just a terribly executed plan right from the beginning.
Well, they shoved so many references in and set up for other movies. Like,
well, and if I remember the few bits I do remember of it, it's like someone tried to mix Mission Impossible with, like, the terrible Suicide Squad movie.
The Suicide Squad movie is probably a good reference. Like, Suicide Squad, is like half of a good movie and then another half of just poorly executed
garbage.
Well,
it's the same idea, right? Some archaeologist finds a box that has a magic voodoo lady in it. The box is just different.
Yeah.
Yeah. One's basically a tomb and one's a box.
Yeah, basically. The Invisible Man, though.
I like his secret little Batman garage. I thought that was fun.
In this?
Yeah.
I don't remember his Batman garage.
It was, I mean, it wasn't really Batman. It wasn't a super secret garage. It was just his, like, techie playground.
Oh, his little, like, tech thing under...
Yeah. Well, it was his garage, though. That's where she got her car from.
Yeah, and where she got... No, where because the suits were. Was that where the suits were?
Everything was down there. Because when she first leaves, it's the first hint of the suit, is that there is this...
Oh, there's the
there's
big...
There's chamber
big
where it's missing.
Chamber thing, yeah.
Or is it just invisible?
You actually do see the arm of the suit. Like, a black rubber arm with little eyes on it and stuff.
Oh, do you see like that in the opening shot?
On a stand, like, on a desk, yeah.
Oh, interesting. We probably should have watched
it. I went, hang on!
That's
the bloody suit!
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, the scene where her sister gets killed in the restaurant.
Oh, that is the point for me where I'm like, we are past the point of no return.
Mm.
That is the one time I think I did properly jump in the movie. The only other times I jumped were because I was leaning on you. You jump like no other.
Well, that bit where the paint gets poured over him out of the thing, and he's like, "Bah!"
Yeah, that got me.
But no, in the restaurant,
got me good.
The restaurant was this moment of, is she going to be able to get out of it? Has she found the clever plan? It, you know, it is harping on what you're talking about earlier with the 1930s one, Cal, saying it's, no, this isn't the plan, this isn't the plan, this will be the plan. And she had the plan, and she thought she'd gotten her way around it of being in this crowded restaurant. How could anything go wrong? And yet it does, and it's the same thing as in the house where she somehow gets painted as a murderer for sitting there, and well, she thought she might have had one more person on her side understanding what was happening, who's immediately taken away and literally sent her as far up the river as she possibly could go at this point. She's down for the count.
Well, that was the moment in the movie where I'm like, this guy's unstoppable. There's no way you can stop him.
Yeah.
Well, and like, because it's one of those, like, in hindsight, after the suit was hidden in that wardrobe compartment, like, it probably could have just been a fucking, here you go, it's like, yeah, like, that's where the thing is, here's all the proof, please just go there, please just look at it.
Yeah.
Like, you'll find the evidence.
The time in the hospital's just as harrowing, though, because it's a little bit harping on what they try to do with Candyman of... Only she can see the guy there.
Yeah, that's true. I think we spoke about that a little bit last week.
Mm.
Yeah, we did.
Well, big surprise, Brian's not caught up on the podcast. Moving on. it is this desperate thing of she's literally trapped. And it is interesting, we really should have rewatched it, that he doesn't kill her then and there, but it never was his intention to kill her, just to torture her.
Hmm.
Well, it was all because she was pregnant with his child.
Oh, true, yeah.
And she steals one of the fountain pens that the brother brings over to try and get her to sign the thing
right,
that says,
yeah.
I agree to have, I turn over my share of the money. So she sneakily steals one of those and some blue tack from a sign on that same table. And then uses the fountain pen to try and commit suicide in her room.
Yeah.
Drawing him out because he doesn't want the baby to die.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that sort of, like, it was, yeah, like, it's a very well constructed movie in that I don't think there's anything you could reduce. You couldn't cut very much out of this movie without taking away something important.
And it's so tightly written, though, too. Like,
well, and everyone has a reason for every action that they take.
Yeah. And everything is a response to the last thing that happened. It's very well plotted. Because one thing happens, leads to the next, and the next, and the next. The only exception is her hiding the suit in that little cupboard. Is that does pay off later, but it doesn't lead directly into the next step. Which is maybe the one thing But I didn't mind it, really, to be honest.
I think that's fine, though, because it could have been for her next step. She was then derailed in what she does.
That's true. She then reacted to the next thing that happened, which I actually think was her sister getting murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah, because so what happened there was she finds the suit, rips it off the mannequin thing in the little chamber, like when the dog starts barking, revealing that he's at the house.
Yeah.
And then so she runs to this compartment that sort of, I assume she knows about, but he doesn't.
Which we set up. They set that up in the opening scene.
Yeah, that's how she gets away at the beginning. Yeah.
Her go bag's hidden there.
So he doesn't know that it's there.
Mm.
And then he just, like, she just runs out of the house after getting beaten up by him again. And then calls her sister.
Yeah, right. Like, that's why she doesn't then immediately...
The thing is, like, now I have the evidence. Yeah.
But now my sister's
dead. So it does
dead.
Sort of lead into the next thing, but yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. Well, fair enough. It's very well plotted then. With no inconsistencies, I take it back.
And, like, the family that she's with, James and Sydney, man, like, they are just so fucking nice and cool.
They're
people. Like,
so nice.
It's
very much the opposite of the old movie. Like, so that they have so much character and their performances are done so well.
Well, and they immediately get you to care about them too. Like, doesn't she give a lot of the money to Sydney for college or for art school or something?
Yeah. So she's getting $100,000 a month and she's giving $10,000 of that to Sydney until that's enough for her to go to college.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, it's super nice, and you're rooting for this to work out. You're almost rooting for them, like, for a romance to take off between her and James to keep this family together.
Well, and it breaks your heart when they start turning on her, worrying
so sad.
About her.
Yeah.
Is you're like, no, you she's trying to protect you.
She's right.
Mm.
I know it seems crazy, but...
I mean,
You're put in her helpless spot of, like, but how could you ever think that I'd do this to you?
Mm.
You protected me. Why would I do this?
Like, the only thing that was sort of jarring about that then took me out of it a bit was that she was sleeping in the same bed as the kid.
That wasn't a normal thing, though, wasn't it? Like a, like, midnight terror thing?
Yeah, like a nightmare thing.
Well, it wasn't that, like, she had a nightmare and then went, and then they said it was okay. She was sleeping in the bed when Adrian was in the room, and she freaks out, throws the blanket on him, he stands on the blanket, and big spoops, and wakes the daughter up, like, who's in the same bed. Like, and it sort of makes sense, like, if you've got this sort of, like, paranoia and you need someone around you all the time, like, I get why they would set that up, and that's an interesting part of the story where they just show you that this is what they're doing for her.
Yeah,
but it just came off as a little weird.
Fair enough. I mean, I know people
I
who would do that
though.
Scene
before
I
that though
was
where there
thing.
Was a conversation of, like, one more night or whatever it was, something that explained why this one night they were doing this thing. Like, I have no memory of thinking it was weird.
Yeah, I don't either. I remember
there was justification for it. Yeah,
I thought so.
There might have been. But it was definitely, it definitely took place, like, there were multiple times in the movie where they were sleeping in the same bed, and I don't know. But, like, it's not really that weird, it just requires some headcanon, like, you just have to assume something about the story, which, like, it's a bit of a weird movie because so much of it is just told to you, like, all of Cecilia's experiences are just told to you, and you sort of have to believe them because like I said before, you never actually see Adrian do anything.
Yeah.
Like, you're pretty sure it's him, but you don't actually have any proof of it. And I can't remember who it was, but one of the reviews I was listening to about this sort of pointed out that that's very much how, like, domestic violence actually works. You've only got what they tell you to sort of go off, because no one's in the home with them like watching it happen all the time.
It's why it's such a big problem, you know, culturally and societally. Well,
and it's so hard to prove.
Yeah, and so to hard convict.
Well, and then what this movie does that continues to illustrate it so well is the victimization of the victim, and how once they finally get to a desperate point to where they do anything that seems like fighting back, somehow the abuser becomes this literal invisible guy that makes her look like the bad guy. It's like, no, you don't understand. You've been missing all of these other things that have happened. Like, it gets me excited just talking about it, because I empathize with it so deeply of this. No, you don't understand. You haven't seen, you don't understand what happened before this. What this looks like is not the full picture.
Mm.
And what that's consistently happening to her over and over again, which is the pattern of fighting domestic abuse, is that once you run or you fight, and if you fight, somehow you end up looking like the bad guy. Well, or the crazy person in a lot of women's cases, because women can't be strong. Women have to be crazy.
Or men, too. Like, a man can't possibly be, you know, be abused by a woman. Therefore,
but they don't come off as crazy. They come off as weak. Yeah.
Or it's not really a problem. You're not really having
issues. She can't possibly do anything.
Be doing that.
Well, that's... So what's so interesting about these six cycles is that, for some reason, we can never empathize. I say we, like, as a greater society, can't fully comprehend or empathize things we don't fully see. What this movie is showing you is that you're so deeply ingrained into empathizing with her, and just exile in this feeling that she's stuck because you're stuck with her.
Yeah, well, and that's just a testament to, and without getting political, people not believing about the virus is literally that. Like, you know,
well,
they can't
see
it.
Things like that today. The virus, climate change, domestic violence,
and
political
agendas.
Before
we go down that rabbit hole too far.
Name an ideology you can't see, and that they're all very similar in that people feel the need to see something in order to believe it.
On another note, the suit itself is really unnerving in of itself. Like, it's got all the eyes on the outside of it. Like, it's very gross.
It triggers trypophobia, the phobia of a lot of holes in something.
Yeah, I have that. I definitely have that.
Yeah. Like, it's a proper gross thing to look at. If it wasn't for the establishing, like, zoom-in shot where you see all the cameras going in and out, it would probably freak me out a lot more than it does.
I think my initial freak out was from the paint, because you see it so briefly.
Yeah, definitely. That is a very good shot.
Good scene, too. You know it's going to happen, but I still freak out. And I'm sorry I made you jump, Brianne, because I tend to do that, don't I?
I just can't sit next to you when we watch these kinds of movies.
Because I jump and you
don't.
I know. Except then, the thing is, we watched Halloween the other day, though.
I'm far more spooked by movies, but I just, like, I turn into a piece of stone that doesn't move until it's over.
You don't jump, but you left the room to go to the toilet and came back shouting at me that the front door was open.
You know what? Our housemate left the front door open, and we were watching Halloween, a movie about where people break into your house to kill you and hide places like, say, the bathroom. So, you know what? My fear was justified.
Yeah, no, I it's fair enough. Which one did everyone like more?
Well, obviously the 2021 is just a much better made film.
Yes, take that, the 1933. You should have made a better movie, dickheads.
They did their best.
They did their best with what they
just
had.
Just the concept of someone being invisible was cool enough.
It was novel at the time.
Like, the whole premise.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. Tweet us at VideoShopPod. What do you think of the two Invisible Men movies?
And then Riley, tell us what the other seven of them were like.
Yes. Is The Invisible Woman, that's a slapstick comedy, worth watching?
Tweet us. What did you think? What stuff do you want us to talk about in November? Do you want Spoopy Ween to just penetrate all the way through to Christmas?
We'll just keep calling it Spooktober. Spook Ember?
Yeah, that's the one.
Spook Ember.
Nah,
Spooktober forever.
Month. Cool. See you, nerds?
Yeah.
See you, nerds.